Today on Voice of the Public, crime and policing in Las Cruces. We'll catch up with Police Chief Miguel Dominguez on the areas he wanted to focus on as he came into the role of Chief of the Las Cruces Police Department.
First one is always going to be crime, reduction of and prevention of crime. I also wanted to work on our transparency, our accountability, and our community engagement. So within that framework, I wanted to implement some strategies that would fall, and I believe they all fall within the blueprint, both internal and external, of 21st century policing.
We'll also be joined by Deputy Chief Kiri Danes, City Manager Ifo Pili, and Mayor Ken Miyagishima. And your questions are welcome. Coming up next after NPR News on Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. 106 at KRWG. It's time for Voice of the Public. This is Casey Counts. Glad to be back with you on this Friday afternoon and a very important topic for our community, crime and policing. And we are joined this afternoon. A couple of notes. First of all, we will not be joined today by our city manager, Ifo Pili, but I have promised to follow up with him and have him on a future show. So stay tuned for that. And last week, if you remember, you were with us for the Fall Gardening Confidential. We had to give you a different telephone number to call. But since then, our original phone lines have been restored. So the telephone number to call with your questions and comments today is 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. We'd love to have you be a part of the program. After all, that's why we call it Voice of the Public. And we are joined this afternoon by Las Cruces Police Chief Miguel Dominguez. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
Thank you, Casey, and hello to everybody out there.
Glad to have you along, and we'll get back to some of those strategies that we heard you mention on a previous episode of Newsmakers, including transparency and accountability and community policing, and we're going to be talking about that today with our Deputy Chief, Kiri Danes, who is with us as well. Welcome to the program.
Well, Casey, thank you for letting us be on today.
So glad to have you. We are joined today as well by Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima. Welcome back, Mayor.
Thank you, Casey. Good afternoon to you and your listeners, and thanks for having us.
All right. Well, let's get started, Chief Dominguez, with a couple of those strategies that you mentioned as you came into the role of Chief of Police. Of course, you said your top priority was crime reduction and crime prevention. And I want to start there with what we're seeing, what trends we're seeing in crime in our community. Earlier this year, there was an article in the Las Cruces Sun News where we talked about some increases that we've seen in Las Cruces over the last 3 years. And I think now that we are, well, we're most of the way through 2021, and certainly we've seen increases, concerning increases around the country in crime. What are we looking at here in Las Cruces? What are you seeing as far as our crime trends are concerned?
Thank you again, Casey, for the opportunity. So as far as crime and what's being reported out there, we're currently, it's a perceived increase in crime right now. And I'm happy to report that we're actually on a downward trend right now. Through April of this year, we were seeing a significant increase in our violent crime, so much so that we were showing about 129% increase in total violent crime. I reported out to City Council in a work session at the time. But since then, monthly numbers have been showing a consistent decrease to where right now, I mean, we are still showing an increase, but compared to the 129, we are at 9% violent crime and a major decrease in our aggravated assaults, which is driving those numbers in the early months of 2020. Our property crime continues to see an increase as far as auto burglaries and vehicle thefts. But all in all, our residential, commercial burglaries, breaking and enterings, those are also trending downward in Las Cruces. And it says a lot to what our officers and our supervision, our deputy chiefs are doing, putting programs together and doing doing projects, things of that nature to keep crime in check in Las Cruces. So property crime, we are showing a 6% increase. primarily driven by auto burglaries and vehicle thefts, but residential burglaries, commercial burglaries, those have gone down significantly. They both are in the negative right now, where they were, for example, commercial burglaries were at 120% increase through April. We had a large increase in, and right now we're showing negative 27. So the perception that, our crime is really out of control in Las Cruces is just that. It's a perception. We have shown a downward trend. With the exception of a few highly publicized incidents, we're doing pretty good in Las Cruces.
Well, that's good to hear. What do
Casey,
you go ahead?
Excuse me for interrupting. Yeah. Can I interject something real quick?
Sure, you can.
So about 2 weeks ago, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, but I'm also on the board of advisors for the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I mean, we've got mayors all over the country, from Seattle, L.A., New York, Omaha, Nebraska, and Miami, right? And so they actually had a meeting on crime, because countrywide, it's up 25 to 30% nationwide. So I want to say that, because, again, as the chief was saying, there is that perception, but it's actually everywhere throughout the United States, in so much that they needed to call this meeting of these mayors to see exactly what's happening and how it could be handled. So I just want to just say that. I apologize for interrupting.
No problem. We're glad to have you here. This is a conversation, and so you're all welcome to jump in whenever you can. Chief Dominguez, what would you attribute, say, that early increase, that increase earlier in the year, and why are we seeing a decrease now? Are you playing Pac-Man there?
Apologies, I'm on my Surface Pro and it's picking up a lot of phone calls. I hate to put the blame everything on COVID-19, but the pandemic definitely was driving numbers, specifically with commercial burglaries, as businesses were closed. Proprietors were going into their businesses 2 or 3 days after a burglary had occurred, and they weren't checking in with their businesses on a daily basis, and that really drove a lot of our commercial burglaries and breaking and enterings, a lot of people going back to work, schools opening up, things of that nature. People are a lot busier than they were at the beginning of the year. We're seeing a significant increase because of that, as well as many projects that our officers are going out there and doing, being very proactive in certain areas that were getting hit hard at the beginning of the year. And we've seen, definitely seen an improvement in that area.
575-646-2212. We'd love to hear from you. What's happening in your community? Are you feeling safe in your community? And do you have questions today for Chief Dominguez, Deputy Chief Daines, or Mayor Ken Miyagishima? They're with us today to discuss crime and policing in Las Cruces. And I'd like to come back to you, Chief, in just a moment to talk about some of those strategies. But I want to skip ahead to the community policing strategy. And Deputy Chief Daines, maybe you can speak to some of the efforts that the department is undertaking, and how are they going so far?
Thank you, Casey. I think they're going well. We're progressing. I'm really excited. Next week, we will be doing interviews for our community advocates, and that's a really large portion of something that I'm sure Chief will speak on, is LCPD Cares. For certain types of crime, you definitely want a police response for certain things that happen, obviously. But what we're looking at focusing on is the community as a whole. And we do a great job as police officers is getting to the root of the issue, taking care of it, you know, making an arrest if that's appropriate, things of that nature. But I think police departments throughout the country kind of do a poor job of following up afterwards of what's going on in the community. So Chief Dominguez really has been spearheading these community advocates. And let me just give you an example. So let's say there is a high profile incident, you know, SWAT call out, or, you know, heaven forbid someone pass away, not necessarily, you know, at the hands of police, but something happens. And the people in that community know that person, or they're affected by the road closures and things of that nature. We're really good about dealing with the perpetrator and the victim of the crime. But our community advocates are going to go forth and talk to those neighbors and other folks that may have been affected afterwards. And if they have questions, about what happened or what they can do to help improve it. And we'll also be able to say, you know, hey, we realize you may have some needs. Have you tried these resources that they may not be aware of? And it's a kind of a less imposing non-police presence. Not that, you know, we're all that, you know, imposing, take a look at me, but I think it makes people feel comfortable that they're dealing with non-police folks that are still associated with the police department that can give them information, point them in the right direction to resources. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. We're also, you know, we do have dedicated community outreach officers, community partnership officers, and they're working hard within our communities to do outreach projects and make real true one-on-one connections with our community. So I'm very excited about that.
Let me ask, who are you looking for in a community advocate?
Well, we are looking for someone with a counseling or social work background and things of that nature that know how to deal with people that have a varied degree of things that may have happened to them or concerns, so they can deal with a very diverse population. So, and understand what's driving some of these root causes and bring it back to us. And it may not be something that's police related, but we get that feedback from the community or the citizens. And then I can reach out to, hey, community development, community outreach, senior programs, maybe state resources, depending on what it is. And so it may not be a police issue, but it's a community issue. And at least if we're aware of it, we can be one of the stakeholders that helps move that forward and make our community a better place to be.
Chief Dominguez, on that note, is this kind of an entree into maybe pairing mental health workers with officers when we have a call for someone in mental health crisis, or is that already being done separately?
That is actually being done separately through mobile integrated health in conjunction with our fire department paramedics. So we're still working at that and still trying to get a working model that we can put out there on a full-time basis. But we do right now partner with the fire department and our CIT officers and team to go out and be proactive with super users and things of that nature.
Mayor Miyagishima, how valuable do you think that kind of an effort can be for the Las Cruces community?
Oh, that's huge. You know, and first, let me just circle back, KC, and thank Chief Dominguez and DC Daines for this is one of the first times, you know, of course, this is a young administration with Chief Dominguez, but one of the few times that we have the top of the city police department here on shows such as this. And I know a lot of this because of you and your advocacy with the university. But by having this, I think is really transparent and lets the public know what's really being worked here. And so, you know, we're fortunate that some of our colleagues on the city council have that background. And I'll be candid with you. I learn a lot from Mayor Pro Tem Gandara. I mean, she would educate me on a lot of things and the chief and his administration, you know, recognizes police work has changed. I mean, it's gone from, in fact, I remember when, you know, if there's going to be a robber or a bank broken into, it's usually through the cyber instead of, you know, holding you up. And so things, it's just gotten so different. And so now you have a lot more people that do have mental issues that they're dealing with. And I think that's where the police officer is expected to handle everything, you know, kind of like a teacher. I mean, they're expected to handle everything. And so this is why it's good that we have different avenues to allow the officers to, you know, if that's not the expertise, there's others that come in to help, you know, with the resident, if they're experiencing that type of trauma, anything like that. And so it's really great to see that move in this direction. Because, you know, that's, you know, and I think the chief, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of your officers have that training. I forgot what you call it, CIT training or something, that a lot of them have that training that they learn how to, at least they're not experts at it, but they have a good grasp of when to kind of tell if they're having a mental health episode or not.
That's correct, Mayor. We take pride in having all our officers CIT advanced certified. As a matter of fact, we have a class coming up next week to certify a few of the newer officers that have not gone through the advanced training, but they do receive a lot of hands-on, a lot of scenario type training to be able to deal with this. And we also put in our virtual reality training through this course.
Chief, do you monitor other communities that are using programs like this where they pair mental health workers with police officers for certain calls? And what successes are you seeing? And are you encouraged that it's the right thing to do for the Las Cruces community?
To answer your question, Casey, yes, we do. And we try to plagiarize any good program that's out there so we can improve ours. We try to look and pick the brain of any department that's out there or any program for that matter that'll help us provide a better service for our citizens.
Let's get back to some of the strategies you mentioned as you took over the role of chief of police. And let's talk first about...
I'm sorry for interrupting, but sometimes the chief is real modest. And let me tell you one thing that I really liked. So years ago, and I'm talking a long time ago, if you wanted to be an FBI agent, they only took you from one of two disciplines, an accounting, you're either an accountant or a lawyer, because that's where a crime was, right? So now I think the chief has, when he's recruiting, I think they have a bonus for those who come with a background of either psychology, sociology. I think they get a $10,000 bonus. So they're police officers, right? But that's the background that they have. And so just like how of course, they'll take, any qualified applicant to the academy. But if you happen to have that type of background, you not only do you become a police officer, but you get a $10,000 bonus or something like that. That's quite a bit.
Well, and I want to talk about recruiting and staffing of the police department and who you're looking for.
Right. Okay, I'll keep quiet. I keep interrupting you.
You don't have to keep quiet, Mayor Miyagi-Shima. You can jump in anytime, as I said before. Not a problem. 646-2212. That's the telephone number to call. 575-646-2212. If you have a question for us on Voice of the Public this afternoon, we are joined by Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagi-Shima, Chief of Police Miguel Dominguez, and Deputy Chief Kiri Danes to talk about crime and police in Las Cruces community. And certainly these concepts can apply to our neighboring communities where you are listening as well, because, we see very similar things in different communities, of course, around southern and southwest New Mexico and in far west Texas as well. So you are welcome to jump in the conversation as well. We would love to have you along. But I was going to just get to that topic of transparency and accountability. And what were the strategies within that, Chief, that you really wanted to focus on?
Casey, we try to model everything over after the six pillars of the 21st century policing model, which are, building trust, policy and oversight, technology, social media, community policing and crime reduction, training and education, and officer safety and wellness. So what we've started doing way back in when I first took over, we had a meeting and we kind of came up with several programs and tried to decide. At first, we were kind of trying to fit things into each one of those pillars. But what worked best for us is combining all those pillars and looking at our programs that we're putting on or putting our initiatives so that they all fall. And each one of those pillars is touched by the programs that we're putting together. So we started off, obviously, with training and things of that nature. We put on a fair and impartial policing training. We invited community members to come in and see what we're training our officers and how we're training our officers and got their feedback and continue to do so. It was very beneficial for our administrative staff, and our officers have not started going through this fair and impartial policing training. We also put together the advanced CIT training. We've incorporated virtual reality training to address certain areas such as mental health, suicidal subjects, de-escalation. We've looked for grants, grant opportunities. We were just approved, as a matter of fact, has not gone through city council, but for a de-escalation grant through the COPS initiative it's about $188,000 grant for de-escalation, getting training our officers and getting an even better simulator for more virtual reality training. We also put together our own classes through our own academy put together a duty to intervene training. We're very close, and I won't steal her thunder, but I'll let Deputy Chief Daines talk about our customer service software. We're getting ready to go to some live beta testing here in a couple of weeks, to where we're actually gathering feedback from our customers, our citizens, as they receive police services. We'll be able to reach out to them through their iPhone and get little surveys, and that will help us immensely in improving our services.
Chief Dominguez, before we move on to Deputy Chief Daines on that topic, we've got a few phone calls to get to. So let's begin with Joe. Good afternoon. Thanks for calling Voice of the Public. How are you?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I was surprised to hear the police chief talk about a drop in crime, because recently a group of women professionals were together having wine, which is a dangerous thing anyway. But we were discussing, we felt that there seemed to be an increase, particularly in juvenile crime involving weapons or very young adults. So I wanted to know if his statistics on drop in crime are the same for juveniles, which I hope it is. And my question to the mayor is, we also heard that...
Oh, Joe.
Which teenagers in our community. So I want true, and then I'll take that correct information, friend.
Joe, we need your mayor to the question again. Sorry, you dropped out a bit.
Okay, the last question, is that what you need?
Yes.
The one for the mayor is, we had heard the weed and seed program funding had been cut. But we needed to know if that was true, because that really does help our teenagers in this community.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you so much for the call.
You know, as far as the weed and seed funding, I'm going to have to defer that to the chief. I was just talking with someone who works at Weed and Seed just 2 days ago. So I know that there may have been an actual location change, but I'm not aware of the funding change. So,
Chief, can you speak to that?
Thank you for your question, Joe. The Weed and Seed program is now nestled under Parks and Rec. So I couldn't speak to the funding. We do have officers that assist with Weed and Seed, and that's the first I've heard of a reduction in funding for Weed and Seed. I can definitely look into it, but I don't believe that's the case. As far as youth crime, there was a couple of incidents, homicides that involved youth, and they were highly publicized. But the trend continues to show downward from April moving on. Again, our violent crime was at 129% increase through April. But month in and out after that, we've seen decreases in our aggravated assaults, and that includes juveniles as well. I attest that to maybe the juveniles going back to school, things of that nature. They're a lot busier than they were before, a lot less.
I think Joe really hit on something that we talked about and touched on earlier, is that there's a perception. There's a feeling. It feels this way. And so that's one of the things that I really wanted to kind of root through this afternoon, is what is the reality versus what it feels like to us going through our day-to-day lives. Our next caller at 575-646-2212 is Cecilia. Hi, good afternoon, Cecilia. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. So I live in the Alameda neighborhood near the Circle K and tennis courts on Picacho. And I have a question as to what is one to do when drug dealers have moved into the neighborhood. You know, I'm afraid to call 911. I had written to my counselor and got an email back, you know, to maybe start a neighborhood watch. You know, these folks moved in over a year ago, and I mean, is there a way for Vice to look into it? What do you guys do to kind of get this kind of activity out of our neighborhoods?
Thank you, Cecilia. Chief, you want to answer that one?
Sure thing, Cecilia. Thank you for your question. And there is an issue with people being afraid to call in when things of that nature happen in their neighborhood. We do have an anonymous line, and if you would leave your number with Casey here in a little bit, we'll definitely reach out to you and keep it confidential. But there's certain neighborhoods where people are afraid for of retaliation, things of that nature. And they can reach out to us anonymously. And that's another thing that our community advocates would be able to do and go in into these neighborhoods where people are afraid because of their, you know, they're afraid to get retaliated against when they report this type of crime. But we look into every situation. We also have a community partnership program where our officers can go in there and work covertly with the citizens making the complaint. And weed out these issues that are happening in different neighborhoods.
All right. Let's go next to Mary, who's been waiting with a question. Mary, thank you for calling. Thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for having this forum where we can ask questions. I have two mental health-related questions I'd like to ask, and I'm not sure to whom I should direct them. The first is, do officers have access to therapy if they need it, like after perhaps they've been exposed to a traumatic event? And my second question is, are there community advocates that go out when there's an incident of interpersonal violence? I believe I heard the chief mention that with COVID, there was more violence occurring in Las Cruces. And so I was wondering, are there folks that go out with those calls to perhaps give some support to the family members who are going through that experience?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. You may have missed earlier, Deputy Chief Daines, I'll bring you back on for this one. We talked about bringing on community advocates to follow up with people who not just were victims of a crime, but the neighborhood, the folks that knew the people involved that may have also been traumatized. And so that is part of what we discussed a little bit earlier on. But let's go back a little bit.
So are there community advocates there now? I'm just completely ignorant on this subject. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask.
Sure. Deputy Chief Dange, you said the interview process was about to get underway?
You're muted, DC Dange.
Sorry, I'm sometimes a little technology impaired. Thank you so much for the call. I'll answer your first question is, yes, the officers do have access to therapy or counseling resources. We do have a psychologist on contract with us, and then we also can use the resources of the city employee assistance program. So we are very diligent about following up with our officers of any possible traumatic incident or anything else that's going on in their lives. It doesn't necessarily have to be a high profile trauma to affect an officer. You never know what's going on. So thank you for asking about the health and wellness of our officers. And that's definitely something that we concentrate on here at LCPD as part of those pillars of 21st century policing.
Deputy Chief, I wanted to ask a kind of a secondary question to that, because while those resources are available, we know that it's a struggle for some people to actually take advantage of them. Is that something, and how do you encourage your officers to take advantage of the systems in place to help them?
Well, we do have a wellness app called Cortico, and it also has a lot of resources that are outside of LCPD, because sometimes people just, maybe they just want a totally objective resource outside. So it lists many of the mental health providers in town and what insurances they take and that nature. We also have several officers and supervisor on staff that are kind of considered peer support folks. So they're always open to sitting down with the officers off duty over a cup of coffee or whatever we need to do to have that discussion. And their mental health, their mental, physical, their entire well-being is very important to us. So we do try to stay up on that as much as possible and be flexible to their needs.
Also, if I could add, we recently gave an award to a law enforcement chaplain who also is used from time to time to counsel those that may need some, you know, if they want to, you know, because he's been around for a long time and a lot of people know him and they trust him. And and he has been there to give them some counsel. Also, I think one of the council members, Abeta Stuvi, I believe, wanted to look at also providing in the future some places for the officers to actually go to just to kind of unwind, even if they've just experienced something, just be able to kind of a place, just to kind of a quiet place, so to speak. So, you know, I have to commend her for that thinking, and I don't know where we are on that process, but I think it's really important, and I'm glad the different opportunities that police officers have, because that's really a tough job, and I thank them every day. I really do. I think I could probably just do it for a day, and that's it. Okay,
No question. It's a tough job. And Deputy Chief Danes, just to make sure that we answered Mary's question about the community advocates, when can folks expect to start seeing those folks out on the street? And is there a place in the meantime where a resident could call to the department now if they needed some help with something that they witnessed in their neighborhood?
Of course. We've had a long-time victims assistance unit, which specifically deals with victims of the crime itself. But they also can refer any community member to resources and give them direction on where they might be able to find those and pass on any information to our officers about possible criminal activity. There are also civilians that are well-trained in that nature. As far as the community advocates, they are not going to be dealing specifically with victims, like our victims assistance unit. This is a total community aspect. So we have interviews starting next week. And of course, we do need to vet them appropriately, pretty thorough background investigation, obviously. And then we hope to have them moving forward at the first of the year. Just really depends with the holidays and getting the background done and when those folks can start. But we're looking forward to working with them in conjunction with our victims assistance unit and the other our other stakeholders within the city and in the community, our faith-based community, other social services. You know, it's not just the police department. We all have to come together. And if we can give out information regarding those services that people in the community may not know about, then even better. So that's where our plan is right now.
All right. Thank you for that. And next is Blanca waiting with a question for Voice of the Public. Good afternoon, Blanca. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have question and concern for the mayor.
Sure. Go ahead.
And the first one is, they're both the same kind of related questions. What is being done about the homeless population in Las Cruces? It seems to be getting worse, especially during the Albertsons by Alpaca area. You know, I don't feel safe when I go to the stores there with my granddaughter. And the other question is, what are your plans to fix this?
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's obviously a big topic, with something that was on our list for today for sure. Mayor, would you like to start?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, Blanca. I don't know if you were... I agree with you. It seems like all of a sudden, I'm not going to just blame COVID, but all of a sudden we have more and more homeless. And so I was invited by KVIA TV to, talk with some of the homeless people that are out there. So I was able to meet up with five of them. Spoke with three of them. Two of them I didn't get a really chance to... One of them was just, he seemed like he was happy. He was just moving around the whole country. He was retired military, and he answered all the right questions. So, okay. But let me tell you something that I found that was really significant. Of the three that I spoke to, one of them was a firefighter who hurt his back, not from Las Cruces, but a firefighter who hurt his back and is due Social Security disability. But he couldn't go to the office because, he has all his stuff there. And then he thought he couldn't call. Let me tell you something. It's very difficult to get a hold of Social Security. You pretty much need to go through a congressman or senator's office to do that. The second person I spoke to needs an ID card, just an ID card, because to get his checks cashed. He doesn't have any ID card. He showed me a medical card, and that's it. And then the third one has been paying out of his Social Security. He says for 27 years, his is child support, which, you know, I think it stops after 18 years, but the worst, you know, the longest. What I'm trying to say is he needed to get a hold of Social Security. Two of the three people had Social Security questions that if they could get resolved, they would actually, that's a life-changing for them, event for them, because now that's additional funds one would have. The other one hasn't been getting any money. And so I reached out to the Community of Hope, Nicole Martinez over there, who does a lot of our work. You know, we basically contract with them, who helps our homeless population. And they do a fantastic job. I'm going to tell you something. Before she became a congresswoman, the HUD administrator for our section, which was Section 6, HUD Administrator 6, came down and viewed the Community of Hope and loved it. She said, Ken, this is the model of what you're going to probably see the United States go to, because it had everything that we have there. So circling back to what Blanca asked, is I reached out to Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales to see if we could somehow get a task force to help, you know, especially when it comes to the state, to get an ID card and things of this nature, because we're going to have to go to them. They're not going to come to us. They're out there. They've got all their belongings. If they were to leave for one moment, all that stuff's going to get stolen. Mm-hmm. So I guess,
and I think that's the part that, you know, that's the part that we're concerned about, right? Yeah. Is that element that Blanca maybe experiences when she goes to the store, and that people feel like they not, you know, unsafe.
Yeah. And I want to circle back to that. And so, and the chief can confirm this or not, but let's take the parking lot of Albertsons. So that technically is a private property. Now, if they're on the sidewalk, that's different. So if Albertsons was to call and or give permission to the police to just, hey, you know, have them start move, you know, get move them out, you go to the sidewalk, whatever, I think they can do that. And I think that option has been given to several businesses. So it's up to them to tell the police, okay, listen, this, we don't want them here. They're trespassing. Please remove them. And until that happens, it's almost like, well, you know, they're not going to go looking for, the police isn't going to go looking to just remove them. But if the business calls them, then I think that's when they go into action. Is that correct, Chief?
You're correct, Mayor. You're correct on that point.
I want to, you know, and it's important to note that you're telling some of the personal stories, Mayor Miyagishima, that you ran across. And the homeless population, just like any other segment of the population, is not a homogenous group of people. They're all individuals with different stories, different reasons for being in that situation. And so it's important to note that. But as a person who does drive through that area regularly, I can attest to some of the concerns. I mean, you can see people who are visibly disturbed, or somehow they're yelling into thin air, and they'll just walk right into the street. You have to be extremely cautious, and especially at night it can get really scary, because they may be wearing dark clothing and you're driving down the street and you don't see a person until you're just about right on top of them. So what resources, and how do we direct those resources, the resources that the city has to offer, to those people who are in that kind of situation amongst that population?
And I need to give credit to County Manager Macias, Fernando Macias, because several have tried and he got it open. I know recently there was a situation, but I think I know why. But and that's the crisis triage. So that if a member of the public, and I've called one in, you know, just exactly what you're saying, they're yelling, they're doing whatever. And that allows law enforcement to pick them up, not arrest them, take them to the crisis triage. And that you've got nurses, you've got medical professionals there that they can determine if they're having a mental health episode, and maybe they're off their medicine. Because a lot of times, and I didn't know this until, again, I'm going to just circle back and give a lot of credit to Mayor Pro Tem Gandara, that a lot of the people there in the detention center do have mental health issues, and they were off their medication. That's why they're in jail. And I didn't know that until I do now, you know, after listening, but years ago, I didn't know that. I just figured they were just acting up. But, you know, and so these are things that, you know, so the crisis triage center is one. The other is the community of hope, you know, if they have this. But you're right. There's just some that don't want to be helped. Remember I told you I saw five. Well, one of them, I was trying to approach him. I was a little cautious because he was picking up rocks, and then he just dropped them and took off, and then he started yelling at me, and I just walked to my truck and took off. But yeah, it's a challenge. So what I was trying to get at, Casey, is if we experience that small increase of people who are having access to Social Security, because before you could go into the Social Security office, but after COVID, it shut down, it got locked, and you had to make an appointment. If that's the case, if that's the case here, imagine if that's what's happening nationwide, why all of a sudden you're seeing all over the United States homeless population increasing. Is it that they too, some of them, a good chunk of them, a portion of them, don't have access to Social Security, that when they really do deserve benefits, maybe they were getting it, something happened, then they can't get a hold of them? They're not gonna go to their congressman's office and hey, you know, can you set up an appointment for me? You know, that's why I think we need to kind of have a little task force that goes out and visits them and see exactly how can they be helped.
All right, sounds like a good idea. 575-646-2212. The telephone number to call for Voice of the Public this afternoon with Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagishima, Police Chief Miguel Dominguez, and Deputy Chief Kerry Daines. We have a Facebook question that came in from Michelle. Again, touching on this question, why does it seem like there is so much more violent crime here on Las Cruces? That's something that we've talked about a couple of different times along the way already, is that we do have these perceptions, and that we are learning that since April, we're actually seeing crime decreasing in Las Cruces. And so we have to look at what the numbers are and what's really happening despite what our perceptions are. But we also should feel safe. And it shouldn't feel like there's so much more violent crime. So that's something I think to continue discussing. But the next question is, are we not growing our law enforcement at the same rate as we are growing our population? And so that would lead us into the topic of recruitment and staffing. Chief, how are things looking for the department right now?
Well, Casey, right now we have 171 officers employed. That's on paper out of a 202 authorized force. So we're about 88% staffed right now. There is some officers that are part of the military and they're on long-term deployment. So we lose a few to deployments through the military, as well as long-term officers getting hurt. We have three officers that were a part of some pretty high-profile incidents that received significant injuries, and they've been gone as well. So we're at an operating strength more or less of about 163. Deputy Chief Daines can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but we're doing everything we can to hire officers. We're looking at lateral officers as well. We're offering currently a $20,000 signing bonus for lateral officers for a three-year commitment. We're also in the process of hiring for our next police academy, which will start in January. So if we have a pretty decent show out for that academy and hire enough officers, we should be in a pretty safe operating range as far as officers are concerned. We do have some incentives that we're hiring, that we're using to attract cadets. We have a base level incentive of $6,000, just a sign-on bonus. Military service with an honorable discharge and or a four-year degree gets you $10,000 signing bonus. To the mayor's point a little while ago, we're offering $20,000 for anybody with a degree in sociology, psychology, criminology, or criminal justice. So we're looking for specific types and really wanting to get them on the street because of their education and their experiences. And then if you have a master's or a doctorate, it's a $25,000 sign-on bonus. So we're doing everything that we can as far as you know, offering incentives, things of that nature. We're trying to get past this. We had our last two academies, our COVID academy, which it's been named, was supposed to be 25 people. And we only ended up with four on the streets from that one. The academy number 50 that was right after it, again, we're hiring for 25. And we ended up with 10. So we ended up with 14 officers out of what was supposed to be 50, which would have definitely bolstered our numbers. We're definitely looking at increasing our 202 strength given the population of Las Cruces right now. But, it's kind of a hard, fast rule. It's two officers for every 1,000 citizens, but doesn't really translate for us because we are so widespread geographically. We're 77 square miles, and it really wears us thin. If we have one major incident on one side of town, it draws a lot of resources and having to call in shifts, things of that nature. So we're currently doing a study to get a proposal up to City Council to increase our numbers from 202.
And, we've heard a lot about people in every profession almost kind of reevaluating and maybe leaving their positions to do something different. Do you think, Deputy Chief Daines, is this something that police departments are seeing as well?
Thank you, Casey. Police departments throughout the United States are seeing the hiring shortages, just like Amazon and trucking and everyone else is. So it is harder to draw folks to this profession. And it's not just one reason. There's numerous reasons. There's perception, reality, and things of that nature. But it is tough. Everybody tells you to go to school, get a great, get your degree, and then you're going to go work for Google or whatever, which is great. But when you're in public safety or any kind of civil service, we're 24/7, 365, and it is hard. I mean, I imagine, you're a young person and you can't be home on holidays and you're working nights and weekends. So that makes it difficult too. So there's a lot of things. And then, we're looking for folks with a real sense of service. And I'm not trying to say this, but, kind of like those folks that went into the Peace Corps during the Kennedy years, looking for that sense of self and service above others, service above self. And those folks are still out there, but drawing them to our profession when everybody else is trying to draw them into the profession is tough as well. But we're very lucky. The folks that we're hiring are from this community, from this area. They want to give back. They have a sense of service to our community. So, also we have some pretty high standards as well. We should. And so we want to make sure that we're keeping those as well. I am very optimistic about this next academy though. And we have some other programs available like the police service aides, which are unarmed folks. You can start when you're 18, which is kind of nice, and get your retirement going. And it gets your foot in the door, and you're taking non-traffic crashes, simple police reports of that nature. But you're getting into the camaraderie, feeling what the tempo is like here at LCPD. And then that'll also give you a little incentive and also to come to the academy because you kind of already know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to increase those numbers as well. So we're trying to think of many different opportunities to draw folks to this profession. And I have to admit, this is the best job ever. This is the best thing I've ever done in my career. And LCPD has been wonderful to me. So anybody who wants to talk about it, it's tough nights and weekends, but it's definitely, definitely worth it if you want to do something bigger than yourself.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. And Everett is on the line. Welcome to Voice of the Public, Everett. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you. Actually, my name is Everardo Troche.
Everardo. Okay, gotcha.
Yes. I'm a health inspector from the New Mexico Environment Department. And I've been working here in Las Cruces for the last 7 years. It's a wonderful community, but also I can observe driving every day 5 days a week for several years. I have a lot of observations regarding the homeless. All right. Now, there's some people faking they're homeless. They go and park their vehicles behind buildings, and they change their clothing, and they go out there in the corners and ask for money. Right? So, and I'm in line with the mayor. You know, there's some good homeless that they need help. But there's some bad homeless that they need to get rid of. They need to ask where they're coming from, As a matter of fact, I ask at least five of them, because I drive every day, all day around the city doing my inspections. Mm-hmm. And so this guy was telling me that they were just dropped off from Arizona in a van, that they didn't know where they were going to take them. And they said there were like 11 of them in that van coming from Arizona. They're all homeless, and they're all here, and most of them, they don't even know where they're going. They drop them off here on the highway, he says.
So what it sounds like you're saying is that much like maybe immigrants would encounter, maybe people who are transient encounter similar situations where someone will take them somewhere, and then they go out and see what kind of money they can raise standing on the corner? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, that's the idea. And about my observation, you know, I've seen them changing clothing with cars or trucks. They lock the car, they lock the truck, they go up to the corner with bad, dirty clothing, and at the end of the day, they come back behind the building, they change the clothing, and they don't go out driving their vehicles.
Well,
they're fake. Most of them, a lot of them, they're fake homeless. They go out there up to no good.
Let's see what the chief and deputy chief have to say about that. Chief Dominguez, is that something that police are kind of onto and aware of?
Casey, and thank you, caller, for that question. Yeah, we have seen that, and most times the businesses, to the mayor's point, will call us and let us know, hey, we got somebody here trying to, fraudulently collect money from people thinking that they're homeless. We have others that, you know, kind of do the same thing. We'll notice them from corner to corner. One day they're up by on the east side, and then the next day they're down over here, and we realize that they actually have a vehicle and things of that nature. And there's some that will just put a sign up, say, "Why lie? I want a beer," things of that nature. So we know that that there is a significant issue. But the mayor was pointing out in his drive around the town, I'm sure you noticed it. The homeless culture is a subculture, and they have. They like to stay around people that they know and are like them and things like that. So you see them in certain areas of town a little more congregated than others. And there's, you know, just like any other culture, there's, you know, people that they try to stay away from, they don't like, they're being bullied. But there is a large amount of substance abuse and mental health issues amongst the homeless with more resources that we could we could guide them to and push them into. We could definitely make more strides to improving the homeless population in this town.
We're getting close to the top of the hour, so let me try to squeeze your question in, Wayne. Thank you for waiting. What was on your mind?
I'm Wayne, and I heard about the triage center. Yeah. I read recently by Peter Goodman in the Sun News a couple weeks ago that there were some issues with the management of it, and things weren't working as well as we had hoped.
Yeah.
Anyone want to come in on that?
Well, that's unfortunately, with just the couple of minutes that we have left, Mayor Miyagishima, what can you say about ongoing efforts at the Triage Center?
Sure, and thanks for that question, Wayne. So this is my take on it. I haven't had a chance to talk to Fernando, but the reason how this crisis triage is funded, a lot of it is through the Medicaid money that is received, you know, when you're treating these patients. Well, they have to have patients for that money to come in. And just like any other business, in order to have full staff, you need to have cash flow. And so I think like anything else, like any business, maybe they thought that this was going to be really quite a few people utilizing it. But it, like any other business, it takes a while to kind of build up to those numbers. And so if you only have two or three people a day, that's not enough to sustain, you know, three or four or five medical professionals daily. You know, so I think the staffing had to probably scale back a little bit.
I think everybody's frustrated that after all these years, we're still in this infancy stage.
Yeah. And so I haven't talked to this with my colleagues yet, but we may want to see if we can help, even if it's not necessarily a bridge loan, but basically have a contribution so that they can still have those services, even if they do have two people a day. until the numbers start increasing.
All right. Well, Mayor Ken Miyagishima, thank you so much for coming back and speaking with us today. I'm going to forward another Facebook question for you that we got, because it's about getting a speed bump in your neighborhood. And I figure there's a channel for our listener to go through on that. So, Michelle, we will follow up with you on that. Thank you for coming back, Mayor Ken.
And, oh, absolutely.
And thank you, Chief Dominguez, for spending this hour with us. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And Deputy Chief Carrie Danes, good to see you. Thank you for being part of the program today, and best of luck to you all.
Thank you very much, Casey.
And thanks. It is 2:00. We do have NPR News coming up next, and Leora Zeitlin is here for Intermezzo by Request. Thanks for listening to Voice of the Public. And if you're just joining the program and missed most of the show today, just give us a few minutes. You can find it posted on the region's homepage, krwg.org. You can click on Local Radio and Voice of the Public. And we'll be back next Friday. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and our guest will be longtime El Paso news anchor and cancer survivor Estela Casas. She'll talk about her journey through breast cancer and what she's doing to help other women in theirs. That's next Friday on Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. Have a great Friday afternoon and a wonderful weekend.